Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says the department is reviewing guidelines on issuing subpoenas for journalist records as part of a stepped-up effort to investigate and prosecute potential leakers. Sessions said the Justice Department has charged four people with leaking classified information or concealing contacts with foreign intelligence agents this year.
Simply put, these leaks hurt our country. All of us in government can do better. The first requirement is for discipline within all our agencies of the government. To prevent these leaks, every agency and Congress has to do better.
The United States wants the UN Security Council to act quickly and draft a resolution that would deprive North Korea of $1 billion a year in revenue that helps fuel its nuclear and ballistic missile program. This is in response to Pyongyang's intercontinental ballistic missile launches July 3rd and 28th. It showed that the nation may now have the capacity to bring the U.S. mainland and much of Europe into its crosshairs. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is questioning witnesses about whether former Trump administration National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was secretly paid by the Turkish government during the final months of the 2016 presidential campaign. The New York Times reports that Mueller recently asked the White House for documents related to Flynn, the first known instance of Mueller's team asking the White House to hand over records. The newspaper said the document request was not a formal subpoena. Flynn was President Trump's national security advisor for just 24 days, but has become one of the central figures in the investigation of possible collusion between Russia and the Trump administration during the presidential campaign. This is VOA News. The United Nations does confirm that it received notification from the United States about its intention to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement unless it identifies suitable terms for re-engagement. The U.S. State Department said Friday that it will continue to participate in international climate change negotiations during the withdrawal process, which is expected to take at least 3 years. Venezuela's new legislative superbody is set to convene again. Controversial Constituent Assembly, inaugurated Friday, is expected to rewrite the Constitution and give new powers to the ruling Socialist Party. Foreign ministers of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations have reiterated their grave concerns over the escalation of tensions in the Korean Peninsula. In a statement issued at the end of their meeting in Manila Saturday, the 10-member nation said the recent ballistic missile launches and nuclear tests by North Korea threaten peace, security, and stability in the region and around the world. Alan Cayetano is the Philippine Foreign Affairs Secretary.
The time is now. In the next few days, let us seize this opportunity to transform shared aspirations and values instituted by our founding fathers, no less their dreams and their visions, into concrete actions and tangible outcomes that will propel our community to the brighter future our people truly deserve.
The annual forum is a grouping of 27 nations, including both Korea, Russia, and the United States. And U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will be in Manila Saturday and begin meetings with a variety of people Sunday. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has been sworn in for a second term after easily winning the presidential election in May. Rouhani, who was seen by some as a moderate leader, led Iran from relative global isolation when he signed a nuclear deal in 2015 with several world powers in exchange for lifting the sanctions against the country. Earlier this week, though, the United States confirmed new sanctions against Iran, leading the country to accuse the U.S. of violating the deal. Over the past year, minorities across the United States have increased their outreach to the public in efforts to make their voices heard amid fears of white supremacy movements. The Sikhs of Oak Creek, however, were working to raise awareness of their faith and uplift their community long before 2016. On August 5, 2012, a white supremacist named Wade Michael Page killed six believers of the faith in a house of worship outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In the 5 years since, the members have organized scholarships, blood drives, 6K walks and runs, and presentations on understanding the faith in local schools. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
As a commission so far, we have made all the preparations for the election. We are confident that we have the technology in place. We tested it in terms of transmission of the results.
The Kenyan Electoral Commission distributes voter materials ahead of Tuesday's general election.
Kenya is our very important neighbor. So naturally, it's high time now we start making relationship with different political parties within the region. That is why we endorse Uhuru Kenyatta.
The Tanzanian main opposition Chadema endorses the re-election bid of the Kenyan president Uhuru Kenyatta.
Parents and the teachers have appealed to the bishops to open their doors so that their children can go back to school. And the bishops have told the parents, we have never closed down our schools because we believe that education is something which is a right.
And Catholic bishops call for an end to the education boycott in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission is distributing voter materials across the country in preparation for the August 8 general election. It comes as political parties and their candidates get ready for Tuesday's elections. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta faces a tough competition from main opposition leader and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. President Kenyatta says he would defeat Odinga again, although pundits say Odinga is likely to win the presidential vote. For more on the electoral body's preparations in the run-up to the poll, I reached Dr. Rosalind Kwamboka Akombe, Commissioner at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission in the capital, Nairobi.
As a commission so far, we have made all the preparations for the election. We are confident that we have the technology in place. We tested it in terms of transmission of the results. And the success rate was almost 100%. And we've been doing the training of our staff, the last pieces of the training, parts of the training of our staff, that is of the clerical officers, that will be completed in the next 2 days. We have been also transporting material to various parts of the country in places which are a bit difficult to access. We've been using aircraft to deliver the material there. So generally, when you look at the checklist, our checklist of the things that we need to have done by now, we feel pretty confident that we are there.
Will the Electoral Commission have a backup in case the biometric system that proved to be effective when you tried it fails?
Well, I think if there is any piece of technology, the two elements of technology that we have, the biometric verification aspect and the result transmission, you know, to be frank, the biometric verification is the most the one that we are most confident with because we have used it on several occasions, but we also know that it's standalone and is not as susceptible to manipulation as you would have in the case of transmission. But in any case, for both situations, that is the result transmission and the biometric verification, in case of failure of technology, the law provides for us to be able to use a complementary mechanism. And that is what we'll put into place in case the technology fails.
Concerns of participating political parties and presidential candidates have been raised a number of times. Is the Electoral Commission, the IEBC, resolving these concerns ahead of the elections?
You know, the Commission has been engaging very closely with all the stakeholders. Civil society organizations have raised some of their concerns. You know, we have political parties raising some of the concerns, and we have done as much as possible to allay any fears that people might have of the impartiality of the Commission, of rigging of the election. And I think we have put in place various mechanisms to avert any situations that would lead people to abuse our technology or to rig the election. So I think when you look at, you follow our media now and you see the concerns that that the Kenyans are raising, they're not as many as they were when we began the process. So I think people generally feel confident, especially yesterday. That was a very huge confidence building measure among the Kenyan people. when they could see us live transmitting the results from 47 locations and being able to transmit those results with very little hitches.
Well, I understand there are a slew of international and local observers who are all over the country looking and monitoring what is going on. What is the close relationship with some of these observers as to abiding by the rules and regulations the IEBC has set for them ahead of the elections?
You're right. I mean, Nairobi's hotels are now fully booked. We have quite a number of observers from all over the world who have who are in Nairobi and other parts of the country. We have been, you know, having various sessions, briefing sessions. We have actually almost the entire tomorrow morning with various high-level delegates who are leading observation missions to work together to try and see what issues you know, they have out there. And so far, we have not seen any of those observation groups going beyond their mandate or going beyond their remit. They have been working with us following the various procedures that we have put in place. And as we have said on several occasions, we value the role of observers because that is part of enhancing our transparency and accountability in the electoral system.
What about the issue of violence? Any issues that the combination of the IEBC and the security agencies to address some of these challenges?
Yes, I mean, we have been working with the various state agencies. We have the Inspector of Police has made it very clear that the Ministry of Interior has also made it very clear that they will provide all the support that the Commission will need in securing the polling stations, in securing the tallying centres. You know, so in terms of you know, the security measures to ensure that voters come out and vote and that our staff are protected and are able to carry out their work, we are confident that these measures are being put in place. I mean, obviously, we are a country that is always under threat from the Al-Shabaab. We have seen some attacks that have taken place even early today in the northern part of the country, and we keep monitoring those areas and working with the security agencies to see how best to secure the various polling stations in those areas so that we do not disenfranchise any Kenyan who wants or desires to come out to vote.
Dr. Roslyn Kwamboka Akombe is a commissioner at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. She spoke with me from Nairobi. Meanwhile, Tanzania's main opposition party, Chama cha Demokrasia na Maendeleo, or Chadema, has endorsed the re-election bid of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. But supporters of the Tanzanian ruling party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, say the endorsement is regrettable and undiplomatic since they said it meddles in the internal affairs of Kenya. They also said Kenyans are the only citizens to decide who their next leader should be. To understand the rationale behind the endorsement, I reached Freeman Mbowe, chairman for the Tanzanian main opposition party Chadema in Kilimanjaro.
Kenya, they were a very important neighbor. So naturally, it's high time now we start making relationship with different political parties within the region. That is why we endorse Uhuru Kenyatta. That's point number one. But point number two, Uhuru has been a model of democracy in the region. We are seeing some very, you know, not so much democratic government in the region. We see a problem in Rwanda by our standards. We see a problem in Uganda. We see a problem in Burundi. But Kenya is one nation in the region that has demonstrated beyond any reasonable doubt that the current government do support democracy, do understand and respect the role of the opposition, and we think this is a model that has to be respected in the region.
There are suggestions that the decision of Chadema to endorse President Uhuru Kenyatta, who is incumbent in Kenya, meant to spite President Magufuli because Chadema has accused him of being dictatorial.
But yes, you know, there's an English say which goes like, show me your friend and I'll tell you who you are. And we understand it's a personal relationship between our president, Magufuli, and Raila in Kenya. They've had a long relationship which really casts doubt whether Raila sympathized with the role of opposition in Tanzania. And we expected him to be the person to really ensure that every possible step is taken to ensure the growth of democracy in the region. But unfortunately, while President Magufuli is suppressing the opposition in Tanzania, is he trying to control the independence of the judiciary, the independence of the legislature? Definitely, President Magufuli is not a pro-democracy person. Now, if you see any person who supports Magufuli and endorses Magufuli, on the other hand, definitely cannot be our friend.
Some Tanzanians I spoke with are expressing concern that the decision to cross the border to endorse President Uhuru Kenyatta is unprofessional and undiplomatic. Your take?
Whether we like it or not, all political parties globally have their families. There's a Socialist International, by which CCM is a member, and Socialist International has a number of political parties around the world. South Africa ANC, ZANU of Zimbabwe, Angela Merkel's party in Germany, NPP of Ghana, and so many others. So we have a family of political parties whereby we support each other in a way or another during the election, not necessarily to go into the election itself, but at least to sympathize with what they are fighting for.
Edward Lowassa, who led your party in the recent election that President Magufuli won, is a known Maasai leader in East Africa. Some people are saying Chadema's endorsement of Uhuru Kenyatta has all to do with ethnicity or tribal politics, because his endorsement or the party's endorsement will sway the Maasai to the side of the Jubilee, and that is the calculation behind the endorsement. What are your thoughts?
If you can remember, during the last election in Kenya, we did support ODM. We supported Raila Odinga then. By then, Raila was working as our sister party in Kenya. And when we fully endorsed Raila, we supported Raila. We prayed for Raila to win, but unfortunately, he couldn't. But you see, we parted ways with Raila when it came to our election in Tanzania in 2015, when he decided to endorse President Magufuli and supported Magufuli. Now, if you have a friend who is supporting your enemy, definitely is not your friend. Now, the question of everybody belongs to a certain ethnic group in the region, okay? We have a lot of Luos in Tanzania as well. And if it's, you know, as far as we are concerned, we are not looking into the tribal aspect of any of the candidate. We are looking at the kind of a person, how serious this person is, and how can this very person build the relationship in the region? How can we fast track the regional integration to go into political federation? And you know, we in Tanzania, at least for one, we think beyond ethnic lines and ethnic groupings.
Freeman Mbowe is the chairman for the Tanzanian main opposition party, Chadema. He spoke with me from Kilimanjaro. Rwandan President Paul Kagame has won a third term in office, garnering 98% of the votes, according to partial results released by the Electoral Commission Saturday. President Kagame and his Rwandan Patriotic Front, or RPF, party were largely expected to win with a landslide. His rivals, Frank Habineza of the Democratic Green Party and independent candidate Philippe Mpayimana, barely got 1% of the votes. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached David Himbara, a former aide to President Kagame, and asked him if he was surprised by the landslide win.
There was no surprise. The only surprise actually is that this man didn't win by 100%. So 98.6% makes sense.
Elsewhere in the world, the 98% win would be almost unimaginable in a democracy. Do you think it's a normal in Rwanda?
No, it's not normal in Rwanda. Like anywhere else, the genuine opposition is either in prison, was blocked from participating in the elections, or are in exile. So Kagame was basically running against himself.
Kagame also won by about 98% in the diaspora vote. And it's common knowledge or common assumption that he's unpopular in the diaspora. Are you surprised by that result?
Well, because the people who would be having a different opinion from him would not dare go to vote even outside Rwanda. Those would be chased. They're hunted, so they wouldn't be voting. So those are his cronies and his people that go to vote.
Now, with this kind of popularity and support among the people of Rwanda, what would stop him from staying in power until 2034 if he so desires, as the constitution allows him now?
Well, not only will he stay until 2034, he has also spoken of Vision 2050. So in 2034, he'll be a young man. He'll be 77. By African standards, that's quite a young person. So he'll continue at this rate, unless, of course, something happens. In Rwanda, all leaders have left power via violence. So I would, again, this is the most likely as well, given that he's blocked any peaceful even discussion.
What accounts for this kind of support, seeming support? Is it people cowed, or do they sincerely believe that he's the right man for the job for now?
Well, again, in Rwanda, this is not a surprise. You may recall that in genocide, people were ordered to kill neighbors. This is a society that seems just it's a cowed population that follow orders and follow authority. So this is not surprising. The man in power controls all the levers of power, and then everyone follows.
David Himbara is a former aide to Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Toronto, Canada. Catholic bishops in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon have called for an end to the boycott of schools. The boycott was a leading factor of the crisis, which has paralyzed some regions of the country since last year. The ecclesiastical province of Bamenda has instructed schools to begin registering students for the upcoming academic year, which begins in September. To learn more about the call to end the education boycott, I reached Bishop George Nkuo, Vice President of the Bamenda Provincial Episcopal Conference. He told me the education of Cameroonian children is the priority and a chief mission of the Catholic Church.
Parents and the teachers have appealed to the bishops to open their doors so that their children can go back to school. And the bishops have told the parents, we have never closed down our schools because we believe that education is something which is a right that the children have. So we have done everything all along to try to negotiate with them that the children should not be held hostage in this fight that's going on between, I don't know what.
Father Nkuo, some are saying that the move by parents coming to the bishops to open the schools undermine their struggle to have recognition by President Paul Biya's government, because so far the government has yet to move to resolve the crisis. What do you say to that?
And the bishops are saying, yes, the people in the Anglophone zone really have a cause, which the bishops have very clearly articulated in the memorandum they presented to the head of state. But bishops are very clear also that you cannot use the children as pawns, as hostages. There are other ways. And why should only the children be the ones to suffer, to make the sacrifice? We appeal. Everybody has to make the sacrifice for this cause to be realized. So we don't think it is just. We don't think it is fair. We don't think it is correct for the teachers in the primary schools alone and the children to suffer because there is a political problem. Everybody should participate, collectively take part in resolving the problem. They don't see why only children should be the victims.
Has the Catholic bishops in Cameroon come up with a stance to offer themselves as possible mediators to resolve this crisis?
In a memorandum to the head of state, we said we are very open and ready in whatever way we can contribute because we love our country, we love peace, we love justice, we love the truth, and that we are ready at any point if we can facilitate the process. But I think we are still waiting for that. But I think it is not fair for children to be used. And the other parties who are intimidating children and us, that we should not start school, I think it is not right for them either.
Regarding the Catholic schools in the English-speaking part of the country, when will the admission begin for the new academic calendar?
Our doors will be open on Monday, and schools will officially begin in practically all of our schools on Monday the 7th of August. And in that way, we can catch up.
Any attempt to really sit down with the parents and convince them, those who are refusing to send their children to school, to allow them to come to school?
Well, there are two things involved. because of such intimidation of parents by those who think that we should not reopen schools, the parents have the problem of security. So we are trying to see what measures we can take, because parents want, it is parents who took the move. It was not the bishops who took the move. The parents took the move, the initiative to ask us to open our doors so that children to come to school. We have done that, but there is such violent rejection of that move by those who think that it fulfilled the cause. So we have said, no, we must put security measures around to make sure that the children can. But I don't think they are even ready to, the other parties are ready to negotiate even. They are using intimidation, they are using violence, they are using all kinds of means. I can tell you already, I'm talking to you from Kumo, in one of our colleges, they were ready to set the school on fire. Luckily, God would intervene. All the petrol and the things that they put to set the school on fire did not succeed. But for God's intervention, we don't know what happened. They didn't burn down the school. So they are using violent means, they are using cruel means and intimidation to get the cause, which is wrong. We do not approve of that.
Apart from the Catholic Church instituting security measures, what about the state security agencies? Have you contacted them to offer protection, to protect life and property?
We have, and in fact, they readily were available. But we didn't want to be running a school with the army around us. We want that the community should take responsibility. The security will only come in when there is real danger, for example, when they are threatening to burn down our schools. But otherwise, we don't want to be running our schools with the army surrounding us, because that is not our culture. That's not the way schools are done. We are taking all the measures to put security, to put our people around to make sure that the children are safe. The army will only come in as a last resort, but we don't want that. We hope it doesn't happen.
Bishop George Nkuo is the vice president of the Bamenda Provincial Episcopal Conference in Cameroon. He spoke with me from Kumbo near Bamenda. The World Health Organization says a campaign to provide anti-malaria drugs to hundreds of thousands of young children in northeast Nigeria will prevent thousands of deaths from this waterborne disease. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports it has provided anti-malaria drugs to nearly 900,000 children aged 3 months to 5 years out of a child population of 1.1 million in areas formerly held by Boko Haram militants who sought to set up an Islamist state in northeast Nigeria. The high coverage of this vulnerable population with life-saving drugs is part of a new strategy to tackle malaria, a major killer of children under age 5. The director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, tells VOA the agency has completed the first round of an emergency approach to quickly stop the disease from striking a fatal blow. He says the drug both clears the parasites that might already have invaded the child system and provides protection for the next 3 to 4 weeks.
By repeating this operation to the same children every month over the next 4 or 5 months, which is the high transmission area, we may potentially, unfortunately, won't be perfect, and therefore we won't be able to stop all deaths, but we should be able to have a massive impact in terms of prevention of disease and death in that specific population group, which is the highest risk group and where mortality concentrates.
Alonso says WHO estimates more than 8,000 cases of malaria every week, including 7 deaths among northeastern Nigeria's 3.7 million population. He adds these figures are underestimated and the true number is probably 5 to 7 times higher. He says about 10,000 lives will be saved by providing anti-malaria drugs to the same 900,000 children every month until November, when the period of high transmission will be over. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa. An in-depth review and discussion on the electoral process and results of the presidential elections in Rwanda and Kenya. Election fever in East Africa. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Maven.
Girl, I have a question to ask you today. Will you marry me even though I met you today? And she said, you don't even know my father. Oh, the mommy rara, you don't know my mother. I'm Messiah. Can you pay my red rice? It's just $1 million.
International money, yeah. And what pay at for them? But God fellow, would you daddy me? Kiro Ramashe Fajimi, yeah.
Everything is nice. The
everybody's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine. Over the world to daddy yo, daddy yo.
That's why they call me a butter. Luto, me a shabba butter. Kito blue, but why did you go ta? Oli ye, come on me jogumi. Shaa sana ta jojumi. Like bara aloru wale mumi. Ishe olu ako di sumi. Bobo koti mo beri lo fumi. Oyo mi lawa wata fe gumi. Ala fi atoro ovi fumi. Lai solu a ye o babumi. Owo ni keke yi re re she. Olu a di koma lo le she. Iwo di koma li mo kekwe. Reminis to be the whole back way.
Everything is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine. Over the world you daddy yo, daddy yo. Over the world you baba me. Over the world you daddy yo, daddy yo. Over the world you baba me. Hey. Everything is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine. Over the world you daddy yo, daddy yo. Over the world you baba me. Over the world you daddy yo, daddy yo. Over the world you baba me. Over the world you daddy yo, daddy yo. Over the world you baba me. Over the world you daddy yo, daddy yo. Over the world you baba me.
Records.
Subzilla.
Heavy Kills Beats.
Subzilla Go.
My love for you, this one passes Super Mario. Be my Lewis Lane and he'll be a
fine, 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 baby. You know who do the beats. Gospel on the beat, the song they sweets me like biscuits. Techno in Jideka, I'll give you my number later. Fangavella, na yeta, na, na, na. She calling me techie. They want to see money, daddy. The girl, she they make me the party. Like say, I they play Super Mario. Hey, follow me down to Butago. Me and you play Nintendo. Anyhow you want it, I like it. See, anyhow you want it, I like it. I love it, yeah.
If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh baby. No do, gotta, gotta for me. No do, said I don't. My number one in tutu. Sipping brooku tutu. For your love in tutu. I go tutu tutu tutu. Biko obianuju. Say you do me juju. Cause I'm feeling the juju. Shake it to you. I wanna dash it to you.
Take it.
You can have it to you.
Take it.
You know I got this in you.
Take it.
I love you. I love you. There's nothing above you. Bridget, yeah. I like your miniskirt, yeah. Okay, you carry fancy, yeah. If I tell you, hey, I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci. For your body, oh baby.
No do,
gotta for me.
No do,
said I don't.
No do,
shakara, oh eh.
No do,
gotta for me, oh eh. Yeah, yeah, beautiful too. My number one in tutu. Sipping brooku tutu. For your love it tutu. I go chuku chuku chuku. Biko obianuju. Say you do me juju. Cause I'm feeling the juju. And you know say nobody only. But I don't go tell you story. I gotta be your man. I gotta be your man. Let me talk to you. Say a few things. Girl, I'm feeling you. But it's up to you. Say you know I got this. I love you. There's nothing above you. Bridget, yeah. I like your miniskirt, yeah. Okay, you carry fancy, yeah. If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh baby.
No do,
gotta for me.
No do,
said I don't.
No do,
shakara, oh eh.
No do,
gotta for me, oh
eh. Your favorite boy, techno on the beat.
Mix Monster.
Yeah.
That was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the man who builds his own throne rules over a desert. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile program is today one of the most serious threats to the world as a whole. North Korea has threatened its neighbors and flouted United Nations resolutions. North Korea's test of an intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, on July 4th was a major escalation. Kim Jong-un's resolve to achieve a nuclear-tipped ballistic missile capable of reaching the United States mainland constitutes a serious escalation of North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile program. The threat posed by North Korea is not new, having challenged five previous administrations, said State Department Acting Assistant Secretary for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Susan Thornton. From long experience, we know that North Korea has no intention of abandoning its nuclear program in the current environment. But increasing economic and diplomatic pressure may work, particularly since Kim Jong-un's regime has never faced a sustained period of intense international pressure. We will change that, working with international partners wherever possible. But we will not hesitate to act unilaterally against those who enable North Korea's pursuit of strategic nuclear capabilities. Based on these experiences, we have developed a three-pronged strategy, said Acting Assistant Secretary Thornton. First, we've called on all UN member states to fully implement the commitments they made regarding North Korea. Second, we've urged countries to suspend or downgrade diplomatic relations with North Korea. And finally, we asked all countries to cut trade ties with Pyongyang to increase North Korea's financial isolation. We have relentlessly implemented this policy, said Acting Assistant Secretary Thornton. From Mali to Malaysia, we have made clear that applying greater pressure on North Korea is not only a talking point. It is an area where we expect continuing cooperation as a basis for strong bilateral relations. Crucial to the success of our strategy is our trilateral cooperation with Japan and South Korea, as is China's growing but uneven pressure, particularly economic pressure, on North Korea. Together, these actions all send a clear message to the international community. If you attempt to evade sanctions and conduct business with designated North Korean entities, you will pay a price, said Acting Assistant Secretary Thornton. We will continue to fully exercise all of our standing sanctions authorities to choke off revenue streams to North Korea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.